Hello, everyone. My name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm pleased to be your moderator tonight for this important COVID-19 update from the City of Mississauga. Joining me this evening is Mayor Bonnie Crombie, along with Dr. Lawrence Lowe, Medical Health Officer of Health, Region of Peel, and Michelle DeManuel, President of, and CEO of Trillium Health Partners. City Councilors, City Senior City Staff, Deputy Chief Patrick from Peel Regional Police, and Chief Dundas from Peel Regional Paramedics are also available to answer questions. Before we hear from our speakers, let me start by explaining how a telephone town hall works. Right now, residents from all over Mississauga are answering their phones and connecting to the discussion. You will have a chance to ask your questions of the mayor and our panel, and to raise issues that you think are critical at this time. You can get in line to ask a question at any time by pressing *3 on your phone keypad. You'll then be put through to an operator who will take your question and put you into a queue. For those of you joining us online, please type your question into the question field. Your questions will be read out loud by me, the moderator. Our emphasis tonight will be on providing important COVID-19 updates and hearing your questions and from other residents who want to ask the city and our panel. Again, here are a few things to keep in mind when you ask a question tonight. When using your phone to ask a question, press *3 on your phone keypad and you'll be routed to an operator who will ask you to provide your name and the nature of your question. For those of you joining us online, please type your question into the question field. Your question will be read out loud by me. Please try to keep your question as brief as possible. There are a lot of people on the line, and we want to try to get to as many of your questions as we can. Please ensure your question is related to COVID-19. For those of you just joining, my name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm pleased to be your moderator for this telephone town hall with Mayor Crombie, Dr. Lawrence Lowe, Michelle DeManuel, and senior staff from the City of Mississauga. It's my job to keep this conversation moving smoothly and to make sure we get to hear your questions and have as much discussion as possible. Before we start getting to your questions, I would like to invite Mayor Crombie, Dr. Lowe, and Michelle DeManuel to say a few words. Mayor.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our fifth COVID-19 Teletown Hall. I believe the last update we did for you was back in June. Tonight, we will provide you with an update on our city's efforts to respond to the second wave of COVID-19. And most importantly, we're going to be taking your questions. We'll have 90 minutes together tonight. I'd like to thank those who have joined me on this call and have made themselves available to answer your questions, including Dr. Lawrence Lowe, our Chief Medical Officer of Health, Michelle DeManuel, our CEO of Trillium Health Partners, those are our hospitals, Paul Mitchum, who is the City Manager and Chief Administrative Officer, Nancy McDonald Duncan, our Fire Chief and Director, or Acting Fire Chief rather, and Director of Emergency Service Management, Gary Kent, our Commissioner of Corporate Services and our CFO, Sherry Lichterman, our Commissioner of Community Services, Jeff Wright, our Commissioner of Transportation and Works, Andra Maxwell, our City Solicitor, Sam Rogers, our Director of Enforcement, Peter Dundas, our Chief of Peel Paramedics, and Randy Patrick, our Deputy Chief of Police from Peel Regional Police. And I want to thank them for joining us all tonight as well. We wanted to hold this town hall tonight because of the COVID situation in Peel has changed dramatically over the last week. This is a fluid, fast-moving situation, and my top priority as mayor is always ensuring everyone in our community understands the decision-making process. Last week, Peel Region was moved into the red, or the control zone, under the new provincial framework. This means that there was some loosening of restrictions compared to those in the modified stage 2 that we had been in previously. However, Dr. Lowe felt that with the reopening of restaurants, bars, and gyms, and other things, we needed a strong counterbalance, specifically measures that limited community spread. We know that both small and large social gatherings continue to drive up our numbers. I do want to thank all the residents and the business owners and faith-based organizations who are already closely following the guidelines. We need to continue to be vigilant because our region, our city, is in a very precarious situation. The number of COVID-19 cases in Peel have been rising rapidly, with an average of 382 new daily cases over the last week in Peel and 114 new daily cases in Mississauga. These are by far the highest numbers we have seen in the region since the onset of the pandemic. It was just over a week and a half ago that we were still in the range of 55 new cases per day. That's how quickly things have changed. The Thanksgiving long weekend and continuing workplace and social outbreaks are driving up our numbers in Mississauga and Peel. The reality, as hard as it is to stomach, is that viral spread is accelerating in our community. Dr. Lowe has told me that contact tracing is becoming increasingly challenged, and that if the numbers continue to rise, his team will no longer be able to conduct the investigations to contact trace, except in the most vulnerable settings and in the most severe outbreaks. I will let Michelle DeManuel talk more about the situation facing our hospital and Dr. Lowe about our long-term care homes, but I can say that things are steadily getting worse. We need to do everything in our power to stop the movement of this virus. If we can't, the reality is that cases will turn into more and more hospitalizations, more patients in the ICU, and eventually more deaths. We are now seeing transmissions in our congregate living settings like our long-term care homes and our senior centers. And we know how badly the virus tore through those during the first wave in the spring. Everyone in our community has to step up right here and right now. My message is simple. I'm urging all residents, business owners, faith organizations, in the strongest possible terms, to follow the provincial guidelines as well as the additional restrictions that Dr. Lowe has added. Please limit all close in-person contact to just your immediate household. Postpone those social activities and those get-togethers with your extended family. Only go out when you absolutely need to. Work, school, fitness, health, buying groceries, necessities, gas, pharmaceuticals. And for those celebrating Diwali and Bandi Chor Divas in the next few days, please keep it to your immediate family only. If you want the larger extended family to celebrate with you, connect with them online. I know these are big asks, and I know people are tired and frustrated, but we're at a real crisis point right now. People want to believe that COVID-19 is over with, but the truth is that it's ramping up in our community. And if we ignore the advice of public health officials, I genuinely feel that we're going to face prolonged restrictions and a larger and longer lockdown. If that happens, there won't be any debate about how many people can eat inside a restaurant, or how many people can attend a place of worship, or how many people you can have over at your house. It will be back to the closures that we saw in the spring. And I know nobody wants that. So please continue following the advice of our public health officials. It's simply irresponsible if you do not. This is now about lives and preserving life in our community. That, above all else, is our number one priority. And now, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Lawrence Lowe, our Medical Officer of Health, to provide us with an update. Dr. Lowe, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, colleagues, Jody, and good evening, Mississauga. As of noon today, Peel Public Health has investigated 6,470 cases of COVID-19 in Mississauga. And of these, 828 are active, 5,405 are resolved, and 237 have passed away. On Tuesday, the region of Peel saw its highest ever reported daily case count at 466, of which 162 cases were Mississauga residents. I know it's difficult to hear that cases are rising along with our test positivity, and also that area hospitals, particularly William Osler Hospital in Brampton, are under extreme pressure. This has actually led me, in addition to the red control zone that the province moved us into last Friday, to introduce enhanced measures for our region to bring the virus under better control as quickly as possible. At these case levels, contact tracing is becoming increasingly fraught, and our hospital partners are busy with their usual business and are challenged in dealing with the COVID surge. We are deep in our community's second wave. Until now, as Mayor Crombie mentioned, lots of questions have arisen around what's opened or what's closed. That time is long past. We are now seeing widespread community transmission in the region of Peel and right here in Mississauga. And when we talk about taking a balanced approach to control the pandemic, it requires our focus at this time to deal with the immediate threat of COVID-19, to drive down cases, to stabilize, so that we can safely reopen again. We are at a precipice, which means that our actions matter more than ever. This past weekend, I issued a letter that contains instructions and restrictions that were originally intended to counterbalance the reopening of things like indoor dining and gyms in our community in entering the province's new red control zone. And I want to state at this outset that I'm very grateful, in fact, for Mayor Crombie's support and the support of all of Mississauga Council, Regional Council, around the guidance and the importance and gravity of our situation. It is clear from our trends that these measures were needed regardless of the reopening, as opposed to just as a counterbalance. So our message is simple at this point in time. Over the next 2 to 4 weeks, we must reduce our in-person contacts. That means limiting close contact within 2 meters to your immediate household, people that you already live with, and any essential supports that you rely on from day-to-day care. Beyond your home, I ask that you only meet in person for essential reasons, such as work, school, exercise and fitness, and procuring necessities. Where you do meet, ensure that you are keeping your numbers low and that you are following all the core 4 precautions of distancing, masking, hand washing, and absolutely do not show up if you are sick. This brings me to the other important point. For everything else that isn't an essential reason outside of your home, I am asking at this time that you postpone, cancel, or meet virtually. And certainly recognizing that many in our community this weekend will be celebrating Diwali and Bhandishwar Divas, it is about celebrating at this time with the people that you already live with and connecting virtually with other family members. Even if they're family, if they live at another address, please connect virtually with them this year. Do not attend any group gatherings. Do not host any group gatherings or celebrations. With the rate of transmission we're seeing in our community, it's just not worth it. Every added interaction is an increased risk, and large groups are a fertile ground for spread. Our instructions and recommendations that I issued on behalf of Peel Public Health spoke to the data that we've seen, which shows that we've had dozens of outbreaks and exposures associated with life celebrations such as weddings and also in places of worship. And though recognizing certainly that faith and religious observance is a critical and important part of many of our residents' lives, I ask that you please consider virtual celebrations at this point in time. We have seen in the month of October so many cluster and outbreak investigations linked to places of worship, which continue to challenge our efforts to control this virus. So I'll close by bringing it back to my key message. We must now begin to limit our in-person interactions in order to avoid further closures and curtailments, the likes of which we saw in the spring, if the case counts and the hospitalizations get out of control. We must limit our interactions now to keep our schools open, to protect the most vulnerable in our community, to protect long-term care homes, hospitals, save lives, and keep the December holidays in play. We must act now. This is our last chance within the next few days into next week to really turn around the trajectory that we are seeing in our community. but we need your help to bring this second wave under control, to flatten the curve again, and stop the spread. So please, limit your close contacts to your home, the people you already live with, and limit everything else outside to the most essential with precautions. Thank you, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Our next remarks come from Michelle DeManuel. Michelle.
Thank you, Jody, and thank you, everyone. First and foremost, let me thank our mayor for inviting me to participate in the town hall this evening. My name is Michelle DeManuel, and I am the president and CEO of Trillium Health Partners, your hospital. On behalf of the 12,000 frontline workers at THP, I first and foremost want to thank our community for your amazing support and sacrifice during and throughout this entire period. I want to also thank my partner, Dr. Lowe, for his leadership and partnership as we work together to maintain a safe environment for everyone. We know this period has been challenging, and this community has been hit harder than many. Trillium Health Partners has treated one of the highest numbers of COVID-19 cases in the province, and we continue to see that position hold. As we have been managing through this second wave of the pandemic, we watch very closely three or four key indicators: the increase in the cases, the increase in the positivity rates, the increase in hospitalization rates, and also the impact on our vulnerable populations, such as long-term care. We have been tracking the positivity rates of tests completed in our assessment centers, and we're seeing a 7.9% positivity rate over the last 7 days. To provide some context for you, we would ideally like to see this number below 5%. THP has seen the number of COVID positive patients in the hospital double over the past 7 days. Today, we have 44 COVID positive patients in the hospital, 6 of whom are in critical care. And in fact, since we saw our first patient in March, there has not been a day where we have not had a COVID positive patient. We have seen COVID positive patients of all ages in our hospital, and this is important for people to understand. We see healthy 50-year-olds in good shape, grandmothers, pregnant women, grandfathers, 19-year-olds. There's no standard COVID-19 patient. I've spoken with some of our staff recently, and they were telling me that they were taken aback by how quickly the numbers of COVID-19 patients has changed in the last few days. They told me that the patients they are seeing this time are younger, and that these patients are coming into hospital and telling our staff that they never thought this would happen to them. They never thought their actions would lead to them getting COVID-19. The reality is it affects everyone. THP is preparing to respond and has been over the summer months. We've learned a lot after the first wave. We have a plan to manage through the second wave, which I outlined with the mayor several weeks ago. Our plan includes a commitment to the best infection and prevention control measures and training, a healthy supply of personal protective equipment, increased testing capacity, highly trained and dedicated staff, and when needed and if needed, additional bed capacity that has been funded. To ensure that individuals can always get the high quality acute and life-saving care they need in their own community, we want you to know that we are making sure that we have that available to you right now. To prevent THP from becoming overwhelmed by COVID-19, we urge the community to follow the advice of public health officials and reduce the spread of this virus. Every action counts. Masking, distancing, washing your hands keeps you safe, keeps your loved ones safe, keeps your neighbors safe, and it keeps your hospital strong so we can be there for you when you need us most. Thank you. Back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much, Michelle. For those of you just joining us, my name is Jody Shanoff. I'm your moderator for this evening's telephone town hall. I'm pleased to be here with Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie, Dr. Lowe, Michelle DeManuel, and senior staff from the city. They just provided information on the new and necessary restrictions for Mississauga residents and businesses to help reduce the spread of COVID-19. Now it's time to go to our live questions for this evening. Just a reminder, callers can press *3 on your phone keypad at any time to get in line to ask a question. For those of you who are joining us online, please type your question into the comments section. Our first question tonight comes to us online from Jeff, and Jeff asks the following. Can you please clarify the rules around places of religious assembly? How many people can gather and what precautions do they have to take?
Jody, thank you for the question. This is Mayor Crombie speaking. I'd like to also acknowledge that we have a couple of, before I get to the question, that is, a couple of counselors who are participating on the call, and should we have any ward-specific questions, we'll certainly ask them to respond. Councillor Stephen Dasko from Ward 1, Councillor Karen Rass from Ward 2, and Councillor Ron Starr from Ward 6. So I'd like to acknowledge that they are with us, and if there's time at the end, perhaps they can give a few remarks as well. So the new rules around religious places of worship, I will tell you that the rules have not changed since we were in phase 2, phase 3, and then we went back to phase 2.5, then we went into the red zone. So the rules around places of worship are 30% capacity, and of course you must take down contact information for everyone, anyone who comes into your place of worship. And I don't know if Dr. Lowe or maybe even Andrew want to comment on this further, but the rules have not changed. Dr. Lowe will highly recommend that all services go online and that only a maximum of 50 people attend at any one time, but the provincial framework does allow for 30% capacity. Over to Dr. Lowe. Would anyone else like to comment, Dr. Lowe or Andra?
So, yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. That's absolutely correct. So the provincial framework permits for 30% of the capacity of a venue indoors and 100 people outside. However, given the levels of transmission that we are seeing in our community, I am really strongly recommending that our places of worship consider celebrating but not congregating. So to the extent that you can move virtually, move to virtual services, et cetera, that is my strong recommendation as the medical officer of health for your community. And failing which, there is an additional strong recommendation that if you do continue to hold in-person services, that the 30% of capacity still apply up to a limit of 50. Now, if you choose to ignore the recommendations, that there's no way for me to enforce those. But just for the purposes and explaining a bit of a rationale behind this, the more people that come together, the more possibility there is for interactions that may lead to transmission. People see each other in three dimensions rather than on a glowing screen, perhaps for the first time in a long time. And the human tendency is to trust, to draw closer, to spend more time in close, prolonged contact. The distance of 2 meters starts to shrink further and further. So it's for those reasons that we're recommending that celebrations, at least for the next 2 to 4 weeks, be held virtually. And failing which, that they be held to a limit of 50, an upper limit of 50, with 30% of capacity of the venue still at the foremost. And again, this the other thing is that it also assists with contact tracing. If you limit the number of people at a service and exposure occurs, it makes it a lot easier for us to identify who may have been there on the basis of the logs that you've kept, rather than just saying there's too many people and it's not sure who this person talked to or where, and we'll just have to disclose the name of the venue. So you're absolutely, Madam Mayor is correct. The provincial guidance is clear, 30% indoors and 100% outdoors, but my strong recommendation at this time, especially with case counts where they are, is virtual if you can, and then if you absolutely must meet in person, respect the 30% thing up to an upper capacity limit of 50. Thanks, and I'll pass it back to Jody or to Andrew, depending on who wants to speak at this point.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. I'm happy to move to the next question. Our next question comes to us live from Anne. Anne has a question about the increasing number of COVID-19 cases. Anne, what's your question for the panel this evening?
Okay, my question is, with the numbers being way higher than it was in March, why are things not being shut down? Why are you just leaving it up to the residents of Mississauga? For example, like, you know, churchgoers, why aren't you just not saying, okay, you know what, this is off limits for now until the numbers go down, for example?
So excellent question once again, and certainly we're encouraging everyone to do everything in their power to restrict the spread of the virus, and that includes, as we talked about before, the core four, the face coverings, the safe physical distancing, getting tested if you're ill, and then of course staying home and ensure that your contact tracing gets done. We will also suggest now that you limit your close in-person contacts to just your immediate households and your essential supports, and limit your trips to those that are essential activities, such as going to a work if you can't work from home, going to school, your fitness program, whatever you need at the grocery store, pharmacy, or your banking, or getting gas, etc. And Dr. Lowe, perhaps you'd like to cover some of this as well about what more can be done and why can't more restrictions be added. Certainly, we have to address the source of the spread. The province has, you know, they've moved us depending on the indices into a specific framework that they have outlined, whether it's yellow, they're green, yellow, orange, red. We are in the red zone. We are not in a lockdown. And certainly we will monitor the indices, which Dr. Lowe can review with you. And if warranted, there will be more measures put in place and a potential lockdown down the road if they don't work. Dr. Lowe, would you like to comment as well, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. And thank you to the questioner for this question. The situation we were in the spring is vastly different from the situation we're in right now. And in spring, I think we moved to a broad closure and curtailment in our community for five main reasons. Firstly, we were trying to buy time to understand this disease, both in terms of how it moved and how it is treated. Secondly, at the time, the disease was already rapidly increasing, and we needed to make sure that we interrupted chains of transmission quickly so that we could bring it under control. Thirdly, this was to provide an opportunity for us to ramp up both testing and tracing capacity, as well as for our hospital partners to prepare for the possibility of a surge. And so there was lots of rearrangement and redeployments that happened there. And finally, the main thing was also to try to assist with educating and teaching the public around the measures that we've talked about, the core four, distancing, masking, et cetera. We all remember prior to March that you know, things like physical distancing and masking were not part of our lexicon at that time, and now we know a little bit about what we need to do to live safely with COVID-19. Throughout the summer, additional capacity was added on all of those fronts, and to some extent, they actually were the reason why throughout September and October, we were able to keep cases fairly flat within September in the 60 to 90 range, and then through the first part of October in the 90 to 120 range. And it was only following that after Thanksgiving when we saw a significant surge and broader differentiation into the community, broader spread into the community of cases that we did declare a second wave, which we are now essentially in the midst of here in the region of Peel. And so the provincial framework provides for both indicators around cases, et cetera, but also around contact tracing capacity and hospital capacity that see us moving to and from as a region between the different levels. And at this time, as I've mentioned in my initial remarks, we're at a precipice. We're at the point where we need to take concerted, defined action to bring this under control, failing which we would be looking at something like the closures or curtailments that we're seeing in the spring, given that our tracing capacity, what was built up over the summer, is now exhausted. And then certainly our hospital capacity is becoming increasingly challenged. So we are close to a point where we may need to think about what happened in the spring. But the hope is with this sort of last-ditch effort, the measures that I have put forward in my instructions and my recommendations, targeting certain major drivers in our community around social gatherings, around you know, household contacts, et cetera, hopefully we can try to bring this under control over the next 2 to 4 weeks and maybe see a reduction in cases that will allow us to reclaim some of the control we had over this pandemic that we saw throughout the spring and summer. So it's a great question, but I think the closures and curtailments that happened in the spring happened for very different reasons. And the capacity that we've built up in the meantime allowed us to forestall this to the point that we've gotten so far and to the extent that we can support a higher caseload at this time. But I must be very clear that we are absolutely at a precipice with the exact magnitude of cases that we have at this moment. So thank you, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. That's great information. Our next question comes to us online from Virginia. And Virginia asks the following: if Mississauga's numbers of COVID-19 are not as high as Brampton, why do we have to be put under the same restrictions?
Oh, Virginia, from your lips to God's ears. So if we were a single-tiered city, we would have our own plan, but we are one public health unit with Brampton, notwithstanding they've been pretty much doubling our numbers each day. So the reality is the virus knows no borders, and we move it, and so it, whether it's Mississauga or Brampton, it does move quite easily. We know that people live in Brampton, work in Mississauga, or vice versa. And certainly, if we can get our numbers into something that is more manageable and down to the green zone, if they're still in the red zone, it would be I would have a stronger case in which to advocate to the premier to allow us to have our own plan going forward. But we still almost meet the conditions of the red zone. We're sort of between the orange and the red, so there's still a good case for him to keep us in the same zone along with Brampton, our partner city at the region of Peel. And don't know if Dr. Lowe wants to comment on that as well, but certainly he is our medical officer of health for the region of Peel, and we are one health unit with Caledon, Brampton, and Mississauga. Dr. Lowe, do you care to comment?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you, Virginia, for the question. The reality is that all three of our municipalities are well beyond the 25 per 100,000 cases, at which point the WHO and Harvard actually recommend that stringent restrictions be brought into place. Certainly respecting, of course, that our province has put forward a framework that we've built on here at Peel Public Health in terms of bringing additional measures to try to keep our public safe. I want to really highlight that certainly while the situation in Brampton is extremely concerning, and certainly one that my team and many people in that community are working on, and the situation in Mississauga is also rather concerning, certainly with cases at 74 per 100,000 and the trend increasing, and the recognition as well that while the hospital that is currently impacted most significantly by COVID surge is in Brampton, we do know that if patients can't get into the inn there, the next places that they're going to come are going to be the hospitals in Mississauga. And so I think it's really important to remember that this is a highly interconnected region. The further you start to subdivide various communities and you're ignoring some of the significant interconnections there are in respect of the healthcare system, the fact that it is a single public health unit that serves all three communities, Brampton, Mississauga, and Caledon. And the fact that we're part of the Greater Toronto Area, which is one of the most interconnected, which is an incredibly interconnected, global metropolitan area. And so, I understand, of course, that there's a certain security, or perhaps I would say a perceived sense of security from having slightly lower numbers than the other folks. But the reality is that the numbers here in Mississauga are certainly a cause for concern, and should also be a call to action to make sure that we're getting things under control here in Mississauga insofar as we're trying to do so in the entire region. So, Virginia, I really appreciate the question. I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you very much for that question. Our next question comes to us live. Michelle is on the line, and she's got a question about recreation and community centers. Michelle, what's your question?
Hi, thank you very much for the opportunity. I really appreciate everybody coming down and having residents listen and get updated as well as ask questions. So my question goes to just we're limiting ourselves to our family members in celebration and projecting if we were to go into the red case and have to do more lockdowns, et cetera, are we thinking about the recreation centers and how they can move in that direction, whether it's allowing families to, you know, rent or book time on that basis rather than shutting everything down?
Another great question about use of our recreation centers and community centers. As you remember, back when we were in lockdown, they were all closed down as well. But why don't I ask Sherry Lichterman, our Commissioner of Community Services, to respond to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Mayor Crombie, and thanks for the question. So right now, our community centers are open on a limited basis and obviously modified and taking great precautions. And we do allow for some rentals. As we move into, hopefully not further closures, but if it does happen, we'll really have to see what the regulations state. And so we really want to keep those centers open to the community to keep everyone healthy and active, but we'll have to respect the public health measures and see what the best option is. If you are interested in renting our facilities, there are some limitations, but we do have some options, so I would suggest that you contact the Recreation Customer Service Center at 905-615-4100. Thanks for the question, and back to Jody.
Thank you very much. Our next question came to us online from Vipin Verma. And Vipin asks, what is the city doing to stop social gatherings at residences?
Well, that is a great question as well. And certainly we are asking people to be on the honor system and to abide by the rules to only socialize with their immediate families because the lives of other people depend on it. So we operate, enforcement operates on the basis of complaints. And so we're asking people to call 311 should they see a large gathering or a small gathering, in fact, among their neighbors in their neighborhood. I'm going to ask Sam Rogers to comment. Sam is the head of our enforcement efforts, and he may be able to shed, director of enforcement, and he may be able to shed some more light on how we do enforce all the rules. Thank you. Over to you, Sam.
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor, and thank you for the question, Bip. And just to build on the mayor's comments, I want you to know that the public complaints for social gatherings are our top priority. And our officers will investigate every social gathering public complaint that we receive. And another point, the provincial rent control regulations have not changed. So it's still 10 people indoors and 25 outdoors. And for that reason, we are strictly enforcing those rules. So as the mayor already said, please continue to report all suspected violations to 311, and we will certainly investigate them. Thanks, and back to you, Jody.
Thank you for that question. A reminder to listeners this evening, if you've got a question for Mayor Crombie or any of our panelists, you can dial star 3 on your phone keypad. You'll be put into a queue where you'll have an opportunity to ask your question live. Those of you joining us online can type your question into the comment field, and I will read that live to our panel. Our next question comes to us from John. John is on the line, and he's got a question about upcoming surgery. Go ahead, John.
Hi, my question for you is this. I'm due for surgery in the next few weeks. I'm not sure exactly when. With this increase in COVID-19, what are the chances that the date will get pushed back for elective surgery on the hip?
I think the best person to respond to this is the CEO of our hospital network at Trillium Health Partners. This is Michelle DeManuel. Michelle, can you talk to us about elective surgeries, please?
Thank you, Mayor Crombie. And hi, John. First off, I hope you're doing okay. And our goal is to continue to operate our surgeries. We're almost ramped back up to 100% of our pre-COVID volumes. What we did as part of our wave two planning is we did rearrange some of our services and we did receive some additional funding from the Ontario government. And so in the area particularly of orthopedic surgery, which was impacted a great deal during wave one, where we did ramp a lot of that down, we are able to, I believe, continue to operate at our pre-COVID levels, particularly as we round the corner to November 23rd. We're opening up 36 more beds at our Queensway site and they will be dedicated to orthopedic surgery and hip knee replacements and shoulder repairs as well. So our plan is to continue to operate our surgery program at a higher level. If we require some adjustments over the next few weeks, we have some plans on how we would do that to address staffing issues in the event we have staff who may become ill as part of our community. We also have some additional thoughts around how we would run on hours of operation. So I am at this time feeling confident, but as Dr. Lowe has said, if things continue to move in the wrong direction, we will always take guidance as to what we should or shouldn't be doing in this pandemic from our public health colleagues. And that's why we need our community support to continue to do all these important things around distancing, wearing our masks, adhering to the restrictions so that we can continue to offer these important services to people. Oh, back to you, Jody.
I think we went back to Jody. Are you on the call, Jody? If not, I know that the next question was a resident near the Square One area asking where they could go for a COVID test. I'm happy to respond, and then maybe I'll ask Dr. Lowe and Michelle DeManuel. So certainly, there are different places you can go to. Both of our hospitals do have assessment centers at Credit Valley and at the Mississauga Trillium site. The Credit Valley Hospital also has drive-in service, and we've just added two new sites, the Four Corners Community Health Center at Westwood Square in Malton, and 7205 Goreway Drive, Thursday afternoons, 12 to 4 p.m., and also the Kingsway Paramedic Station, that is another drive-through site at 7120 here, Ontario, and that is open Monday to Friday, 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. There are three new locations in Brampton and one in the Rexdale area, very close to Malton as well. Michelle or Dr. Lowe, Michelle, would you like to talk about the testing sites that are available for people to get tested? And certainly, if they are symptomatic, we recommend they go to an assessment center. And if you're asymptomatic and having no symptoms, but perhaps need to take a COVID test to go back to work, go back to school, to travel, or maybe to go visit a loved one at a long-term care facility, then you should book an appointment at your local pharmacy. And there are eight pharmacies in Mississauga where you can have your test done. So to Michelle, could you talk further about our COVID testing, please?
Madam Mayor, you gave an A-plus answer. I'm not sure what more I would say other than go on our website at Trillium Health Partners, and there's information there that will guide you, particularly if you have symptoms. And then we will get you into our queue and tested. And we're testing about on average 800 to 900 citizens each day. So I think, Mayor, you very nicely explained where you can get those done. But on our website, we'll give you that information. Back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much for that. Our next caller is live. Chris is with us. And Chris has a question about what's going on with COVID-19. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, thank you. It appears to me we may not reduce the infection rates while different health authorities within the Greater Toronto Area impose varying and different restrictions. So the question is, would Dr. Lowe support a circuit breaker type shutdown across the Greater Toronto Area for either 2 or 4 weeks? And if not, why not?
I think the question is whether we would support a lockdown for a period of time. Chris, welcome to the call tonight. Dr. Lowe, I think Chris wants you to take some very serious mitigating measures, and maybe you can share with us what the indices would be before you considered a full lockdown. Over to you, Dr. Lowe.
Thanks very much, Madam Mayor. Thanks, Chris, for the question. I want to be very clear that I would absolutely support a circuit breaker if it was needed and necessary. And specifically as well, it would have to be more than just Peel. I think there's a recognition that there is significant interconnections between many different regions and municipalities, and certainly the City of Toronto, which would render a Peel-specific circuit breaker somewhat challenged in terms of its effectiveness. But to answer the question up front, should the numbers and the indices and metrics indicate to it, yes, I mean, a circuit breaker is not something that is off the table. It's absolutely something that's on the table, and a recognition that what it looks like, what would be closed, what would be opened, how it would be undertaken, how it would be enforced, those are all pieces and discussions. And ultimately, that this would really be a provincial decision in respect of the framework that they have put out, which shows that beyond the red control phase, there is a gray phase that is labeled lockdown, which is a term that I've avoided using. I've tried to say closures, curtailments, a circuit breaker is certainly something else that I've also adopted, with the recognition that it's about saving lives rather than locking people down. To the question of where we are right now, I have said we are essentially having our, if I can use the colloquialism, our last kick at the can here. And certainly a lot of it will depend with, and I should mention this as well, with the tremendous work and updates from our partners, Michelle DeManuel and the folks at Trillium Health Partners, who have done stellar work throughout this pandemic, both in terms of testing, but in terms of keeping people, you know, well, safe, making sure they get the care they need. That, for me, in Mississauga at least, is one of the things that I am keeping a close eye on, in addition to the picture around our hospitals and capacity up in Brampton and Willie-Mosler. And we do know that there are significant perturbations in the hospitalization numbers throughout the region at this point in time. So once it gets beyond cases into contact tracing apparatus, which we're increasingly having significant difficulties with just the surge of cases that we've been seeing, and even despite the help that we're receiving from health units and the Ministry of Health, and then beyond that into the hospitals where the hospitals may be having trouble coping, that will be where I will start to be looking at, well, let's look at the measures we've been taking. Let's look at what we've actually been putting out there. Let's look at how far we've come with the community and whether it's actually making a difference and whether more restrictive measures need to be taken at that point in time. So the answer to your question is yes, I would absolutely support one if it was warranted and if it was with the rest of the Greater Toronto Area municipalities where it makes sense. At this point in time, we have an opportunity to reduce our in-person interactions, to limit our close contacts to the people we live with, and to limit our interactions in person outside our household to the most essential with precautions. And I'm hoping, given that this advice has now been out there for about 5 or 7 days, that if we give it a few days more, we will hopefully see some sort of flattening and leveling out, failing which, and that's another conversation at that point around what we might need to do. Thank you, and I'll pass back to Jody.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe. Our next question comes to us from Paul, and Paul has a question about what comes next with COVID-19. Go ahead, Paul.
Hi. First of all, you guys have been doing a great job updating us, but I am curious of one thing. And because the numbers are changing, the stats are changing, province to province, region to region, what's the best way to follow what is expected sort of for Peel residents? I mean, I try to do my part with the groceries and not going out or whatever, but right now I'm just kind of watching, I watch CBC and I watch City, you know, once a day. But is there a website or what do you, Mayor, and Dr. Lowe recommend to get the best information?
Thank you for the question. I know that the rules have been changing rapidly. Certainly last week we were expecting to be moved from phase 2.5 into the orange, and we ended up in the red, and then we added additional restrictions. So I can see how how the messages caused a lot of confusion as well. Often the most up-to-date information is on our website, which is mississauga.ca/coronavirus, and the same with the region of Peel, peelregion.ca/coronavirus. I'm often on CP24 giving updates, and the councillors today, we had a large discussion about the same thing, whether we mail out cards that are yellow, orange, or red, but how long would that last because rules change and we add different restrictions and guidelines. Then we talked about the ticker boards and we talked about roadside signs. So I know it's very challenging in Mississauga. I would expect, because we don't have a daily newspaper or our own radio TV station. So I suggest the city's website is probably the most up-to-date, most frequently, mississauga.ca/coronavirus. I don't know if anyone else wants to add anything, Paul or Sherry or Dr. Lowe, with respect to how do you get the best information. It is, I would agree, difficult to communicate when things change quickly. Anyone?
Madam Mayor, I could actually take that. It's Gary Kent here. So, yes, as the Mayor mentioned, it's difficult to respond so fast, but I can tell you that we have got all our channels working hard now that we know what the final messaging is. Mobile signs, highway signs, if you see the video screens underneath some of the bridges, and you'll see much more activity in the multicultural area as well. The other thing is we spent some time with the Region of Peel communications staff this afternoon, making sure that we're aligned, and we're also anticipating, if the rules change again, how we can closely work together to continue to have the best messaging and the most effective type from a cost point of view and from a reach point of view. So there's lots of channels we're using, and we just need the information to be accurate, and then we'll blast it through. But Madam Mayor, your advice is sound. Both our websites are the best sources, and thank you for the question.
Thank you very much for that. Our next call comes to us live from Gary. Gary's got a question about restaurants. Gary, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I guess I'll just ask the one question then, and that is about restaurants. So when I see the things coming down from the provincial government where they will shut down restaurants, bars, and gyms and whatever else is in that category, my question is, why are restaurants being grouped into that? And I wonder, I believe we have data that would tell us what the actual spread is in restaurants. And then why are restaurants being grouped in with gyms and bars? A bar, I mean, let's face it, the bar is strictly for drinking. And you go to a bar and people drink and they drop their guard a bit after some alcohol and probably they become a little bit more relaxed about social distancing or wearing a mask or whatever else. A restaurant, I mean, you can go to a restaurant, you don't even need alcohol. You can sit there and have soft drinks or milk or whatever you want. So I'd like to know where the math is, because I've never seen anybody show the math. Where's the math that tells me that restaurants are, you know, one of the causes of the spread? And in great terms, not one restaurant maybe had, you know, somebody with COVID, because every place has had something with COVID. And then,
we're going to answer you. And then you also wanted to know about fines being handed out for house parties. I've got your notes here. I'm going to start the response. I'm going to ask Dr. Lowe to comment, and then I'm going to pass it over to Sam to talk about enforcement. What's it look like in restaurants, gyms, and at the house party level? What does that all look like? So when the provincial modeling was released, we saw that in Peel region, for instance, restaurants, bars, etc., had about 3.3% spread of the virus. Gyms, about another 3.4% spread of the virus. So about 6.7 in total. And that's what we learned with provincial modeling came in just ahead of when the new frameworks were laid down. But we've been studying very closely how the virus is being transmitted here in Peel. And we know that largely it was through social transmission, through community transmission, and through household transmission with a little bit of workplace transmission as well. We know that Toronto's spread of the virus looks different. Transmission is, for the most part, 27%, in fact, through restaurants and other social settings, evening clubs, with the younger generation spreading it. And then we looked at Ottawa, the circumstances were different as well. And a lot of it was congregate settings where the virus was spread. Even the region of York had higher numbers with respect to virus, to restaurants than we did here. If I can share with you today, about 47% of total cases acquired are done through through household contact, 14% through close contact outside the home, 3% through workplace outbreaks, 5% through travel, and 22% it was an unknown exposure source. So I think although they were not the cause of the spread generally, they're also considered a high risk for transmission. When you sit at a restaurant, the circulation isn't as good as if you are outside, outdoors, and the flaps are up on those tents, and you take your mask off and you're more relaxed, hence why we require that people be seated at the tables, exactly what you described. People do become more relaxed after a drink or two, and that's why we didn't want them standing in the bar area. They're seated, but they are still at higher risk for transmission and exposure since the mask is off and they're sitting with a group of people. So globally, and it's in Europe, you see that restaurants is one of those best practices where the closures occur because the risk of transmission is higher, both in restaurants or in gyms. Notwithstanding, they were not the largest source of transmission for us. We did it in an abundance of caution. And I'm going to ask Dr. Lowe to speak further on restaurants. And then I would like Sam Rogers to speak on fines for restaurants, gyms, and also for house parties, because the caller asked about house parties in particular. Thank you. Over to you, Dr. Lowe.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. And thanks very much, Carrie, for the question. So absolutely. I mean, I think I want to be very clear, of course. The data that we have around restaurants, in October you wouldn't have seen anything because indoor dining was closed in our community. And in September, we were in a very different situation. We were having large outbreaks in large workplaces, large households. That was driving what we were seeing in our community. It was high rates of transmission, but in known clusters, which we were able to monitor and track. That allowed us to get an understanding, of course, that the picture in our community was slightly different than what was being seen elsewhere. But I want to be very clear that what we were seeing in September, especially with the question of transmission restaurants being limited, is not what we're seeing now. And the reality of our picture is that we're now seeing far more cases, far more transmission, far more risk than we would have had. And so Mayor Crombie is absolutely right. There's a reason why every other jurisdiction on earth that is trying to deal with COVID-19 has tried to address the risk of indoor restaurants, indoor dining, in addition to bars and nightclubs, because these are places where you may be in close, prolonged contact with individuals, unable to mask or, you know, not masking, where, you know, this is essentially COVID enjoys what are called the three C's, crowded, confined, close contact situations. And so, whether the community levels of transmission are high, whatever the situation is, indoor dining is inherently a risky activity for that reason. And so it's actually for that reason that in the letter of instruction that I issued, there's a strong recommendation there that restaurants, bars, et cetera, that have all recently reopened, really consider possibly just sitting people together who are part of an immediate household, people who already live together. Because one thing that we really need to try to get down in the midst of our second wave here is to limit the amount of household mixing that's occurring. The idea that, you go to the bar or you go to the bar or a restaurant for a sit-down meal with the people that you live with already, who you're spending close contact with on a significantly regular basis, rather than going there with your six buddies from poker night or your buddies from an intramural game, to avoid that household mixing and to avoid that increased risk. But I think to the extent that right now we're seeing widespread community transmission, the question of is transmission happening in restaurants or, you know, places of worship or wherever, it becomes somewhat moot. It becomes incumbent upon all of us in the community to really try to reduce our contacts as much as possible to only those that are absolutely essential outside the home. And so with that, I will thank you, and I'll pass it on to Sam to speak about the enforcement in respect of house parties.
Thanks very much, Dr. Lowe, and hello, Gary. Thank you for the question. So house parties fall under the social gatherings classification that I talked about earlier. That is our top priority for response. And I don't have the exact numbers for house parties specifically, but I can tell you that since the beginning of the pandemic in March, we've issued a total of 140 154 tickets for gatherings, and that's $880 per ticket. We've also laid a total of four Part 3 charges for social gatherings, and that means that the fine amount is actually left up to the courts. But these fines are significantly higher than the $880, and they range from a minimum of $10,000 up to $100,000 for an individual. So as I said before, social gatherings continue to be our top priority, and please, if you do see a house party, report it immediately to 311, and we will investigate. Back over to you, Jody.
Thank you very much for that. For those of you on the phone with us this evening, if you've got a question for Mayor Crombie or any of our panelists, you can dial star 3 on your keypad and you'll be able to speak with, you'll be able to get into a queue where you will get to ask your question live of our panel. Those of you listening online, you can type your question into the comments feed, and I'll read that for you aloud. Our next caller is Deborah, and Deborah's got a question about the restrictions. Deborah, go ahead.
Yes, good evening. My question is it safe to go walking outside with a member or with a friend rather than someone from your family, as long as you have a mask on or you self-distance?
I recognize that voice. Hey, Deborah, how are you? I hope you're keeping well. Say hello to your brother. Listen, I'm going to allow Dr. Lowe to answer this because it's his advice. You know, he's been telling us we should stick to our immediate households or our essential supports. But Dr. Lowe, what do you think? Can girlfriends go for a walk if they're 6 feet apart, 2 meters?
Thank you so much, Deborah,
says yes,
for the question.
Maybe we'll go, Deb.
Thank you so much, Madam Mayor. Thank you so much, Deborah, for the question. You know, in any other ordinary time, I would ordinarily say absolutely. If you're going to go walking, you can certainly go walking with a friend, masked, 6 feet apart. In this case, I'm asking you to sort of take into account your own risk and your own considerations. If it's someone you know, if it's someone that you know that if you know that where they've been in the last 2 weeks, and you're willing to take the risk that you may end up being closer than you need to be during the course of the walk, all those other pieces, I would leave it to you. But I would just say over the next couple weeks, next 2 to 4 weeks, just where we are in the pandemic right now, if there's some way to modify or change and limit your interactions to the most essential, then maybe what you do is you consider your walk with your friend. That's part of the exercise and fitness exception of meeting up with people outside your household. You go ahead and go for a walk with the precautions in place, but you really try to keep it to that minimum going forward. So I know that was a really long answer, but I think the answer is yes. You know, as long as you take precautions, absolutely. But try to make sure that it's consistent and that you're sticking to the precautions when you actually do it as part of the overall minimum of in-person activities that you might be taking. So, Madam Mayor, you may be able to get that walk in, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes to us from Ron, and I'll read Ron's question. Ron asks, does the city of Mississauga have a distribution arrangement with the province when the COVID vaccine will come out?
Okay, I'm quite certain there are protocols in place for this, and I don't know if it's Dr. Lowe or Michelle DeManuel that should respond. Should we start with you, Dr. Lowe?
Absolutely, Madam Mayor. This is something that Peel Public Health has started planning for. Our Director of Immunization and Communicable Disease has started really putting together a framework for trying to understand how this would look in terms of administration, logistics, et cetera, and is working certainly with the Region of Peel. I know that we've also had outreach from our hospital partners, Michelle DeManuel and her team, to figure out how this is going to look. There's a recognition that there's lots of different vaccines that are out there. It's a bit of a horse race to try to figure out which ones are going to which vaccine is going to become available and then available to mass distribution at the time that it comes. But long story short, there's a lot of work that's being done at the local level, preparing for how this is going to be distributed with partners, all those other pieces. Those discussions are starting. And then certainly at the federal and provincial level, there's lots of discussions around strategy in terms of who would get it first, how they would prioritize vaccines, all those other aspects. But yeah, certainly for us at Peel Public Health, that's something that we're planning for and waiting with bated breath for. But maybe I will see if Michelle, is there anything else that you wanted to add on at this point in time?
So Dr. Lowe, thank you. I think first I would just say, and I think Dr. Lowe, you would agree that the administration of vaccines is something that we actually have practiced for many years vis-a-vis our flu vaccine is just one example. So I think I'd just like to point out to our listeners that the administration of a vaccine versus, say, having to create testing centers and assessment centers, which was something new to us, you know, certainly is an area that we had to learn in the first wave. Whereas when I think about the vaccine distribution, I can think of us building upon our strengths from already our both federal, provincial, and local distribution methodologies. I think Dr. Lowe highlights that really for us, the issues become what is unique about this particular vaccine that may present challenges for the distribution. So for example, as has been reported in the press around the temperature which the vaccine has to be stored. That's part of the thinking I'm sure that we're doing locally, but I also know is occurring provincially. And the other challenge that Dr. Lowe looked or mentioned was the challenge around the protocol of who would receive that first, second, third, fourth, et cetera. And it really is always done on a risk basis and a risk-adjusted basis. So these are the kinds of things that are being discussed. Again, I want to emphasize on the really on the strength of distribution distribution capabilities we already have and how we can utilize that and then respond to what challenges may be presented to us by virtue of this particular vaccine. Back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much for that. Our next caller is Monique, and Monique has a question about high-rise buildings. Monique, go ahead with your question, please.
Thank you for providing us the opportunity to ask questions and share concerns. I live in a high-rise apartment building on Dundas Street East in Mississauga. We have major issues with tenants who are not following the recommendations as you've explained and shared with us, in spite of the fact that our property manager has been dutiful in posting all kinds of advice and recommendations and requirements. It has caused enormous stress in our building, as we have probably close to 1,000 people living in what I believe to be a soon-to-be petri dish for COVID. People not wearing masks, refusing to wear masks, arguing with tenants, long lineups at the elevator because one of our elevators is not functioning, so we're down to one. So we can have up to 10 people in an elevator with no masks. So we're at a crisis situation. So my question is, what can the police or bylaw officers do to assist our property manager?
That's a great question, Monique. So certainly I know you know, and many people in your building know that face coverings are required in common public areas. And you already know that only two should ride in an elevator with a mask. Unfortunately, you're down an elevator. But why don't I ask Dr. Lowe to reinforce some of the other recommendations that he can make for anyone living in a high rise. Dr. Lowe?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. You know, I certainly recognize high-rise living is presents additional challenges in terms of the possibility of congregation, et cetera. I think the main thing is certainly when you are in those common areas, if you are wearing a mask, that will assist you in limiting your risk to other individuals who you may unintentionally spend prolonged contact with, particularly if you're in an elevator or passing in the hallway or waiting for the elevator, whatever the case might be. Beyond that, really the same rules apply, and I think to the extent that you can limit your you know, close contact to people that you may live with, in which case it's yourself, or if there are any additional, if you live on your own, that is, And if there's any additional households or other people who are sort of essential supports, that's the other half of it. So I've always said immediate household and essential supports. Essential supports refer to maybe one or two other people who you meet with consistently, usually for day-to-day care, for physical or mental wellness. Those are people that you can also try to make sure that you're in touch with. And if they're within your building, certainly you could aim to expand your bubble, for example, spending your time with those people in the next weeks to come. But the most important thing, as you've described, certainly the concerns in the high rise that you described, you're doing right now in terms of wearing a mask, especially where distancing is not possible in common areas. And then to the extent that you can really try to keep your interactions consistent, that will help to limit your risk, at least during this time over the next couple of weeks. So thank you, Madam Mayor. I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes to us from Dora, and I will read Dora's question. Dora asks, what is the proper protocol when visiting a nursing home? Do you need to show a physical negative COVID test? Does it matter if the testing method is different from place to place?
That's a great question, and I think you believe, I'm going to ask Dr. Lowe in 1 second, you do need a proof of a negative COVID test, and I believe we're only allowing essential visits today. Dr. Lowe or Michelle DeManuel, do you want to comment on the protocols in place to keep our families safe in long-term care facilities, please?
Lawrence, do you want me to go first?
Yeah, absolutely, if you can, Michelle.
Yeah, for sure. So thanks for the question. Let me first just mention how important it is that we continue to ensure that our seniors in long-term care are kept safe. We obviously have learned a lot from wave one. And so there are very specific protocols. The first one is that we are testing every 2 weeks our staff in our long-term care facilities to ensure that we have a high level of observation of what is occurring at the staff level. And then Dr. Lowe, it's directive number 3, I believe, that has been issued by public health, which, and I actually have just pulled it up here quickly, that the home should be asking the visitors, the general visitors who are visiting indoors to verbally attest to the home that they have tested negative within a previous 2-week period and not subsequently tested positive. And that's right out of the public health directive. Back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much for that. Our next caller comes to us live. Ed is with us. And Ed has a question about transmission risk. Go ahead, Ed.
Thank you. I saw Dr. Lowe's press conference this morning. We talked about outbreaks at life celebrations like weddings, birthdays, retirement, et cetera, which we've all seen on Facebook. He talked about places of worship. I've seen priests not wearing masks. He talked about industrial workplace situations. Now, I heard that Mayor Crombie listed the source of transmission by percentage. I'd like to know, is that information available online? And secondly, we need to highlight the most common forms of transmission because, I mean, all the talk about restaurants, bars, and gyms, however risky that might be, might make people think that other things they're doing is not as risky. And we should be highlighting what are the most high-risk situations.
An excellent question, Ed. I think I'll just ask Dr. Lowe to address it because we all know that proximity to other people will increase the risk of transmission. So Dr. Lowe, over to you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Ed, for the question. So I want to be very clear at this point in time. As I've said, we are seeing widespread community transmission throughout the region of Peel. And so at this time, as of right now, it's a little bit less important around which setting you might find yourself in or where you might be. The best idea, given that this disease spreads from person to person, is that for any interaction outside of your household and the people that you live with, that you only meet for the most essential reasons and you make sure that you are taking precautions, the distancing, the masking, etc., when you do meet. This is because of the primary modes of transmission, as you've identified. We do know that this is a disease that typically spreads via droplets, respiratory droplets that fall within a 2-meter radius of where someone who's infected might be standing. But in certain instances, such as closed, poorly ventilated spaces that are crowded, you may have aerosolization and actually still have smaller droplets still lingering in the air, possibly beyond 2 meters, for a longer period of time. And so that's been part of the challenge of classifying how this is transmitted. It is predominantly droplet, but on occasion, under specific circumstances, becomes an aerosol that lingers in the air. And that's been confirmed through evidence and with the revision of various guidelines at both the Canadian federal level as well as internationally. So to your very important point, certainly there's lots of talks about restaurants, industrial places, weddings, et cetera. The work of my recommendations and my instructions were targeted at where we were seeing high numbers of people exposed and high risk. And the aim was to really ensure that we were catching or directing and recommending actions that could be taken in some of these really high-risk settings that we'd identified, places of worship, for example, which, again, recognizing the importance of faith to members of our community, we had seen over 50 case investigations in places of worship throughout the month of October with either forward transmission from someone who had shown up positive or someone who had tested positive, and the only place of acquisition was such a place of worship. So that was part of, targeting some of the higher-risk places. But the reality at this point in time, Ed, as you've correctly identified, is we're seeing spread everywhere. It could be anywhere, in our community at this point in time, and that really speaks to the need for us to limit our close contact to our immediate household and then limit all our interactions beyond our immediate household to the most essential reasons with precautions to really reduce the risk and keep each other and our community safe. So thank you for the question. I'll pass back to Jody.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe. Our next question comes to us live from Brian. Brian's got a question about mandating masking. Go ahead, Brian.
Yes, thank you for letting me ask the question. I'm wondering why we don't move to the idea of mandatory masking. Now, I understand it's mandatory in indoor public places, but why don't we just simply make it a mandate anytime people are out in public? And the reason I mention this is that I'm in the high-risk category, and I find that on those times that I have to go out to do certain things, groceries and whatever, I find that, people who are outdoors do not respect, a 2-meter distance in many cases. I mean, regardless, of what I try to do. And it would seem to me that if masking is that effective, why not just simply mandate it for everybody who's out in public? Period. No exceptions.
Brian, great question as well. And we do have a high degree of compliance with our face covering bylaw. I'm sorry that you have experienced those individuals who are disrespectful and coming within your personal space. But certainly if you can't safely physically distance, we always tell people that they should be wearing their face covering. So Dr. Lowe, what do you know about mandatory masking outdoors? I know that there are different jurisdictions that do practice it. Dr. Lowe?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much for the question, Madam Mayor. And so to this point, we know that when we're out, first of all, I think the most important thing is that we know that transient contact with other individuals, it does not typically spread the virus. And, that said, it is still nice to give people a bit of a wider berth when you're out and about in the community, if you're able. But we do know that if you're passing by very quickly, there hasn't really been evidence to suggest that puts you at any increased risk. That said, certainly recognizing the advice around masking is almost always linked to the possibility of either being indoors or around being physically distanced. And so outdoors, if you're able to physically distance consistently and you're concerned about being in close contact with someone consistently, so we're not talking just passing someone on the sidewalk, but sitting, say face-to-face in a park, you want to, within 2 meters of each other, then you want to be wearing a mask for sure. I think that it's a case where, if you can't distance, you wear a mask, and that's absolutely where it applies outdoors. In indoor spaces, because of the aerosolization piece that I described, and the evidence that's increasing that confirms that, the recommendation at this point in time, and thus the mandate, is that when you are indoors, you wear a mask. Previously, this was because you couldn't physically distance within an indoor space, but I think with the new evidence that we have around closed, confined, crowded spaces and possible aerosolization, you're also just wearing a mask in general to offer some modicum of protection against that as well. And so that's also why the federal government had moved to their recommendation on a three-layer mask, which is something that people can consider. That doesn't mean you get rid of your current masks. Your current masks are still just as good for helping to limit spread and to make sure that you're controlling droplets at the source. Really, to your point, at this point in time, there's no there's nothing to suggest that we should mask consistently outdoors. It remains a strong recommendation, if you can't distance, to wear a mask. But certainly for indoor purposes, at least under the bylaw and the evidence supports, you should definitely, to the extent possible, be wearing a mask indoors, especially when you're around any other people. So thanks so much, and I'll pass back to Jody.
Thank you very much for that question. Our next question came to us online from Yasmin. And Yasmin says the following, as an Indian who loves celebrating Diwali every year, I truly believe that closing down the Gurdwara would be the best option to stop the spread of a large gathering. Although I understand closing down places of worship may be difficult, I believe it's vital.
Yasmin, it's an excellent comment, and unfortunately we don't have the authority to do so. I don't know if you've spoken to the management at your Gurdwara and if they'd be interested in in closing down for the high holiday. Certainly it would be recommended, but I think the legal option doesn't exist. Dr. Lowe or Andrew Maxwell, do you want to comment further on the closing down of a place of a religious assembly?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I might defer to Andrew on this one.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Good question. So whenever we're looking at a place of worship, we do have to strike a balance through our laws here in Canada. Freedom of religion does get afforded certain protections under our Constitution. A government can make a decision to shut down a place of worship, and indeed we did see that at the beginning of the pandemic with the provincial regulations. But when we do that, a government has to consider an appropriate balance of the need to protect public health against that freedom of religion. And so has to really look at whether there is some other way of addressing the public health concern that might be more minimally impairing to that right. So the answer is that yes, it is possible, but it has to be done very carefully and with consideration to the freedom of religion. Over to you, Jody.
Thank you so much for that. Our next question is live. It's from Kwok, and Kwok has a question about contact tracing. Go ahead, Kwok.
Thank you. Yeah, so I'd like to know how many people are doing the contact tracing right now, and also as the number of COVID increases, is the current number enough to handle the job, and is there a financial limit as to how many people you can hire to deal with that?
Kwok, it's Mayor Crombie. It's a great question, and I know Dr. Lowe's ability to contact trace becomes compromised after 300 daily cases, and that he has requested the assistance and support from other regions, and we were able to add on a few more contact tracers. So, Dr. Lowe, please explain to us how it works to with respect to the contact tracing and what your capacity and resources are.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Mayor, and to Kwok, it's a great question. At the height of the first wave, we had about 180, 200 staff deployed to contact tracing, case managers, contact tracers, admins, coordinators. We had a whole slew of individuals that were helping with that. Over the summer, we added another 50%, so we're now at about 300 people, in addition to a number of other people redeployed from across the region of Peel. And also just additional trained up, plus instituted a new digital contact case and contact management system, all of which had increased our capacity to contact trace up to Ideally, we had sort of had an upper limit of about 130, 150 new cases a day. But of course, you know, we were keeping it going at 200 new cases a day. And then now, of course, getting close to where we are right now, it's become increasingly challenged just with that. And certainly, you know, we had made the most of the summer months to try to build up as quickly as we can. But, you know, training and hiring and all these other pieces certainly take time at a time where every other health unit of the province has been competing for similar resources and individuals and talent. So we have been relying as well, in addition to the 300 staff plus the other redeployed staff helping us on, you know, help from about 14 other health units in the province, as well as from the Ministry of Health directly, who has provided us with 17 case managers slash contact tracers. We've been very grateful for that. But even still, at some point, you know, no matter how many fire trucks you have, eventually the fire department runs out of fire trucks if there's still fires being set and a massive fire burning and raging. So we are getting to that point, unfortunately, at the current case levels that we're seeing, you know, like the consistent 400, 500. The hope would be that we as a community can come together, reduce our interactions, try to get this down over the next 2 weeks or so, and then bring it back to a level that's manageable with the infrastructure and capacity that we had built up. So thanks for the question, Kwok, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Our next question comes to us from Anna. Anna's live on the line, and she's got a question about recovery rates. Go ahead, Anna.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking these questions. I just had a couple questions really quick. We post infection rates daily. I'm just wondering how come we don't post recovery rates on a daily basis. What are you guys doing to ensure that business can stay afloat and still remain open when they are able to get back to a regular capacity opening? And what are you doing to ensure that mental health issues are addressed for those that are now having to stay in? It's getting colder. Not many people are going to be going outside to walk, to get, you know, sunlight. It's going to be wintertime, and you're asking everyone now to stay inside and to keep within your own homes. What are you going to do about the mental health issues that may crop up? Thank
All
you.
Right, Anna, you've got, you've asked quite a number of really good questions. So with respect to the recovery rates, they are available, and I can share with you that in the region of Peel, or I can do it by Mississauga, we have had, I'll call it 18,650 cases. Of those, we have had 339 deaths. Many of the deaths, two-thirds of the deaths, are the elderly that from long-term care or seniors facilities. Active right now, we have almost 2,700 active cases. And the recovered rate, you would like to know, I don't know if Dr. Lowe has the percentages, I don't have them worked out, but we've had over 15,600 people, individuals recover, and that's based on the 18,650 total cases. What does that look like in Mississauga? 6,470 total cases, 237 deaths, and 828 active cases, and so the balance would be the recovered. I'll ask Dr. Lowe to respond to that as well. And then if I may ask Paul Mitchum, you haven't had a question yet, Paul, so instead of me answering the question about the business supports, we'll let you do so. And between Dr. Lowe and Michelle DeManuel, if you want to address the health issues, we do that largely at the region of Peel, and they're not with us, so maybe Dr. Lowe, you can respond to that. But certainly the one thing I will say, Anna, is that we're not in a position as the city to provide any financial supports other than that we have deferred all our revenues, deferred our property taxes and all penalties. We just went back to revenue collection. I think that was in July. And we had we were operating free transit as well. But we're not in the position to provide grants. Those are considered bonusing, and those are not permitted grants or loans under the Municipal Act. So I'll let Paul talk about other business supports that we do provide, when we do provide a lot of support to businesses, after Dr. Lowe addresses the recovery rates and the mental health issues. So Dr. Lowe, and then Paul, and then we might be just wrapped up, I think. Over to you, Dr. Lowe.
Thanks, Madam Mayor, and thanks so much, Anna, for the question. Just very quickly, and knowing that Paul is going to speak to the supports, you know, I know that the closures and curtailments have been hard, and that I know they've been difficult. I know there's questions about the recovery rate, although it's very clear from the World Health Organization that they say the mortality rate of COVID-19 is somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 3%, which is almost 10 times higher than flu, which is at 0.1-0.2%. I think the big thing to highlight is a lot of people point to the other health impacts of the closures and curtailments, the mental health, the substance use, you know, the loss of livelihoods, all those other pieces. What they forget is that if the virus runs loose, as has been seen in so many other U.S. jurisdictions, then what happens is those side effects still happen. I have colleagues, I trained in the United States, I have colleagues who have been working in counties that have been particularly hard hit in the U.S., and when the virus is let loose, people are fearful. Restaurants shutter because they're not having any customers coming because everyone is just worried about getting the virus. And then on top of that, you have the hospital overcrowding and capacity challenges, the trauma that our healthcare workers face, and of course the deaths, the excess deaths that are driven by the virus being unleashed in the community. So I think a lot of people point to say, well, you know, these things are causing mental health, etc. The reality is we are in a pandemic, and it is not a happy time in general right now. And we can either try to keep COVID-19 under control through some measures, or we can let the virus loose. But either way, the mental health issues, the challenges that we are facing will always be there because 2020 just hasn't turned out the way that any of us would have anticipated it does. So I think from my perspective, trying to control the virus where it is starting to spin out of control will help to reduce those impacts of the virus on our healthcare system and our community with the recognition that to the extent that we can try to mitigate some of those side effects, the mental health and all the other impacts on health and well-being, whether it's closures or curtailments or viral spread, you know, that's something that we're also continuing to work on with the recognition that these are hard times. Thanks, and I'll pass it on to Paul.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe, and thank you, Anna, for your question. I think we've all come to realize that we're dealing now with both a health crisis in the pandemic and a financial crisis in terms of the overall community. We've tried to focus on increasing digital capacity within the small business sector, and we've got a number of programs that are driving in that direction. One is the Digital Main Street, where we've got a group of skilled digital specialists going door-to-door in retail areas, offering to provide digital marketing support. Another called Shop Here, where we're providing support to business on a website and artists that want to develop and launch an online store. We've opened a website called Mississauga Made, where we promote Mississauga business and offer free online marketing marketplace, pardon me, and one called Ritual One, which provides restaurants and food services an easy way to accept and process food orders with no commission, really free to Mississauga businesses. I think I'm going to leave it at that. I know we're running short on time, but certainly the small business community is a priority for us, and you can get more information by visiting our Mississauga website. Thanks to you, and back to Mayor Crombie.
Thank you all, and thank you, Paul. I want to thank all of you for your thoughtful questions. We're running a little bit over time now, so I just want to thank you all for joining us this evening. I hope you found it informative. As Paul has said, if you have further questions, please go to mississauga.ca/COVID or coronavirus. Either one will work. Thank you all, and a very good night to you. Please feel free to email us or call us at any time. Thank you.